This is Borders-ish, a podcast about the boundaries in our lives. I'm Ana Sotomayor.
And I'm Amaya Haddad.
China is a dangerous place to be an activist. Human rights defenders are often harassed, intimidated, or arbitrarily detained for their work.
For Tang Biao, those risks were always worth it, but it wasn't something his family ever really signed up for. His wife, Lin Wang, saw her life in China upended. And even in the U.S., she still felt the ripple effects of repression.
Zachary Shevin tells us more.
On an average morning in West Windsor, New Jersey, you may hear some joggers strolling around or cars pulling in and out of driveways, but not much else. So when Lin Wang noticed a crowd of 16 standing outside of her home last December, her immediate reaction was excitement.
We lived here for already 5 years. We never have, so many people show up in front of our house. It's really different.
But that excitement quickly turned to anger.
The virus is a biological weapon made by the Chinese Communist Party.
Carrying signs brandished with conspiracy theories, a group of protesters was there to falsely accuse Lin's husband, a prominent human rights lawyer and activist, of being a spy for the Chinese government. Harassment was nothing new for the family, but for the first time in years, it was reaching their front porch.
They are the spy, they are the agent, they are the CCP agent.
Lin and Tang Biao's path toward that moment began about 3 decades earlier. The couple met in high school before Biao was an activist, but it was when Biao went off to college that he began discussing contentious political issues and reading banned books about human rights and liberal democracy.
I was gradually awakened.
After graduation, he was a lawyer, scholar, and NGO leader all at once, and soon enough, government authorities were showing up outside the family's Beijing apartment, warning Biao to stop and telling Lin and her parents to talk him out of his activism.
They told me, he was a teacher, in such good university. He has that's good family. It's unnecessary for him to touch so many sensitive, cases.
As Biao continued his work, the retribution he faced gradually escalated. Warnings turned to threats, and harassment turned to physical violence.
I was even kidnapped by Chinese secret police and detained and tortured.
Lin was never an activist in the typical sense. She worked for a large electronics manufacturer, managing the company's international operations. But when Biao disappeared, she would become active in her own way, lobbying local authorities and using the media to draw attention to her husband's case.
I feel I was part of the story. I'm part of the fight. If you are part of it, you will be very brave, At that moment, I'm an activist to talk and to act and to communicate and to look for other possible solutions.
But while Lin spoke out, she intentionally kept her young daughters in the dark, telling them their dad was traveling or busy with meetings. She admired her husband's work, and she didn't want her kids to believe their father was doing something wrong.
What he was doing cannot bring such consequence. It's not related. It's ridiculous. I don't want to plant something like this in their minds, to influence their growth.
Her oldest daughter, Grace, doesn't remember much about that time, just that her dad's work was always somewhat of a touchy subject. When it came up at big family gatherings, something was always a bit off.
Maybe they try to show some sympathy towards him, but also they don't want to get themselves inside of the mess. I just know that, in general, there was something weird about my family.
The more involved Biao became in his work, the less he wanted to leave. But eventually, staying in China became impossible. In 2013, the CCP cracked down on the New Citizens Movement, a group Biao helped initiate. Working in Hong Kong at the time, he watched from afar as colleagues were arrested.
So it was quite clear if I went back to China, I would be definitely arrested and given a long imprisonment.
So Biao accepted a job offer to work at Harvard, and the family booked their flights to Boston. But shortly before they were set to leave, Lin was stopped at the border on her commute home from the mainland.
I asked why I cannot, go through the gate. And then they took me to office and they told me, I cannot leave because I need to stay here for coordination of some investigation.
It was immediately clear that the investigation had to do with her husband's work. What Lin didn't realize was that her daughters were in the same situation. Grace was stopped soon after.
I just remember something wrong was happening.
Lin tried everything she could, talking to government officials, booking flights out of multiple airports, but she had no luck. For 8 months, the family was split in half.
At that moment, my husband and I, we talked about this and we decided, I need leave. So they let us go or we go in secret way.
Lin arranged her work so things could run without her, so she'd be able to leave at a moment's notice.
That's a place I worked for 17 years. I built a team from zero. It's not easy to leave them, right? But I have to because the family is really important to me, especially my daughter. She was only 6 years old. She was so small, so young. She needed me.
and our family need to be together.
But reuniting the family also meant leaving behind parents, siblings, and other relatives. The timing made that especially difficult. The opportunity to be smuggled out of the country came just before Chinese New Year, an important time for the family to be together. To keep her mom from worrying, Lin made up an elaborate excuse for why she couldn't celebrate that year, saying she had earned a big end-of-year bonus at work, and the company was willing to pay for her and Grace to go on vacation. She told her daughter the same lie, and took her to meet a group of strangers near the border between China and Myanmar. Lin didn't document the journey, but she can remember some of the sounds. The first step was a motorcycle ride. For Grace, it was just another vacation activity.
She was outgoing, she was active, and she was so excited to sit on motorcycle and boom, boom, boom. You know, it's not like sitting in the car. It's like, it's a lot of bumpy, right? And she's like in the adventure park. She was so excited, I pretend to be excited.
From there, their guide took them over a river into Thailand on a makeshift raft.
We got to like this big bank and we sat in it and they like used their hands to like pass the river. I guess that was just another activity, fun activity.
Even 7,000 miles away from China, the family hasn't entirely escaped the backlash from Biao's work. Lin initially continued working at her previous employer's American subsidiary, but after a year, she says her boss became worried that her marriage could cause problems for some of the company's government-affiliated projects.
I did nothing, you know. I'm just the wife of Teng Biao, and what he did is unrelated to me, you know. I cannot accept those excuses, you know, those reasons to let me go.
Especially after losing her job, finding community in New Jersey has been difficult. In adapting to a quieter life, she's been learning to take more time for herself, walking around, riding her bike, doing some freelance consulting work, and taking online courses about self-growth.
Since I cannot go back to China, I just forgot about that part. I just focus on my life here. Have my routine. It's different, but it's good.
But that routine was interrupted again last December. Supporters of Guo Wangui, an exiled Chinese billionaire who Biao has publicly criticized, stood outside the house nearly every day that month, shouting obscenities at the family.
I knew these people already harassed other critics of Guo Wangui, and they even physically attacked and injured a person in Vancouver, Canada.
I really felt very bad at that moment because what they are doing is really disturbing of the peace and silence of our neighborhood.
Grace, the first one in the family to notice the crowd, was worried that the neighborhood might believe the conspiracy theories that the protesters were spouting.
I was scared that the like neighborhood would turn on us.
That's the opposite of what happened. While the harassment itself was no surprise, the community response was.
I didn't know there are so many people who are keen to support me.
After a local paper reported on the incident, concerned residents were connecting over social media and organizing counter-protests.
I saw these photos and this video of people protesting. You know, I just couldn't imagine how threatening that would feel if you were the people in that house.
That's Lauren Davis, a writer who lives in Princeton.
So I phoned a couple of friends and I said, you know, I think I'm going to head down there.
The protesting and counter-protesting dragged on for weeks. Protesters showed up like clockwork nearly every morning and streamed the events to GTV, a controversial media platform formed by Guo and right-wing political operative Steve Bannon. Many of the counter-protesters, including Lisa Garwood from South Brunswick, initially tried to reason with the protesters.
Hello, live stream, whoever I'm talking to over there.
It was interesting and frustrating because the more I tried to speak to them to get some kind of solid factual information, the more they spoke in circles.
You know, to be waving these signs and saying that he brought the coronavirus, you know, to the States, it just seemed insane. It's part of this sort of QAnon global conspiracy stuff.
After several days of tense exchanges, the family felt it would be best to simply ignore the harassment. So from then on, the group of supporters would organize shifts to just sit on the front lawn and be a buffer between the harassers and the home.
Lin would set up tables every day. She would bring us snacks. I mean, it was ridiculous, as if like she didn't owe us anything. We were happy to be there and do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to know some new friends.
I had a lawn chair there and she would put out all these chairs and we would sit and talk.
The regular harassment stopped in early January, but that group of supporters still stays in touch. They have an occasionally active group chat with Biao and Lin, Lauren and Lisa, and 9 other consistent counter-protesters.
Yeah, every now and then somebody pops on and we all get on. Every now and then somebody butt dials us and we all get on.
We are thinking when the, you know, times is good, you know, the weather is good, then we want to invite all of them come to our backyard for a party.
If the protesters wanted the family to feel ostracized by their neighborhood, that plan backfired dramatically. In the end, the experience brought the family closer to a network of people willing to support them and wove the Tongues further into the fabric of their new community. And with the summer nearing and COVID vaccination efforts ramping up, that reunion Lynn mentioned might be able to happen pretty soon.
You're listening to Borders-ish, a 9-part series produced by an audio journalism class at Princeton University. We are your hosts, Ameya Hadap and Anna Sotomayor. Join us next time for a story about how the age-old art of marionette puppeteering is adapting to the pandemic and putting on shows despite their physical separation from their audience.